No, you're on.
Okay. All right. We'll see if we can make this work. I'm going to go back on some of the old school that some of you rookies have not talked about, nutrition and everything. That's perfect, great knowledge. But going back to the old school, you can't beat peanut butter and you can't beat honey, okay? And at halftime and before the ball games, the schools that I were at, we'd buy from Benny Keith or whoever the service people are, little packages of honey. And we'd use them prior to, in the little packages of peanut butter. Talking about one that doesn't want to eat before a ball game, that works out perfect, because they probably were raised up on peanut butter and honey. Honey is a natural aspect from the bee population, and is good for the body itself. It's 110%. And peanut butter is an energy also aspect. So we used it before the game. Just put it out there, then have one, then have five, then have six, then have eight, whichever they wanted. We'd do the same thing at halftime. We'd use water. We never did use a supplemental mixture, okay? Not knocking them, but we used honey, peanut butter, and water is what we used at halftime. And works pretty good. Works pretty good. This is our 32nd year. I wanted to go over some things for you young folks that have not been in as long as I have, and kind of graduate to you some things that could be in your ballpark accomplishments and what have you. And basically it deals with contacts, camaraderie, and association. Okay? It doesn't make any difference how you may not be real outgoing, but with the camaraderie and the contacts and the association and what I've been through, and there's not too many of us left that are still around, to be honest with you. I'm 76 years old, and a lot of them have passed on, unfortunately. But those that have passed on has made your job what it is right now. And I'm going to give you a little example of that. And then in your brochure, where you have your topic, Don put the life, but there is also going to be a second aspect of this, the unknown to the athletic trainer. And it was totally unknown to me at that particular time. But I was too small to play football at a big town called Chillicothe High School in Chillicothe, Texas, up in the edge of the Panhandle. And so I still wanted to be involved in athletics, but I was just too small, okay? So I got started as a water boy and a manager. Athletic training was not even a terminology. So you were a water boy or a manager. They'd either holler at you, manager, get the balls or whatever, or water boy, bring the bottles. And you didn't have all these fancy units that y'all have now that pump up themselves, and you got batteries that work with them, and six or eight spigots you can suck on or whatever. You know, you had plastic bottles made by Kramer, and that's what you ended up doing, and that's what you had. But I started in 1960, is when I started being a manager and a water boy. At that time, what was the top of the line was what was called a Viber Whirlpool. The Viber Whirlpool was made in Panhandle, Texas. It had like a cylinder inside, and it was a boat motor prop that was in there, okay? And it was one speed, and that was it. You had to fill that sucker up all the way to, before you could ever use a whirlpool. You didn't have the little cylinder where you can put 2 feet, 6 or 8 inches or 12 inches or 2 foot or four. You, to use it, you had to fill it up nearly all the way. But it wasn't that expensive. It was only about $450. But now that aspect, those people are out of operation. And now you got some fancy stuff. In 1962, when I graduated, to be honest with you, my parents didn't have a pot to pee in. And I figured I was going to go to the service. But we had a pretty good, at that time, Chillicothe was an 11-man football team. And we had a pretty good season. And the coaches from Cisco Junior College came up there and said, yeah, we can use a manager. So I had to look on the map where Cisco was. And so I ended up going to Cisco. In 1962, I worked my first All-Star game, which was called the Greenbelt Bowl, which is up at Childers, Texas. Even though I wasn't certified, I was a student trainer, but our coach got selected to be one of the coaches. So I went, I had that opportunity to do that. And it was great. And in 1963, that was the first SWATA meeting that I ever went to, and that was held at Baylor University in the Student Union Building. And there's some important names that you may be familiar with, but people that you have never met, unfortunately. It would be very fortunate for you to have met these folks. One of them was Logan Wood. Very instrumental in SWATA and athletic training from Houston. Another one, James Dodson, which some of you folks know already in Midland. Wayne Rideout. Wayne Rideout was from Nacogdoches and very instrumental in SWATA and athletic training. Another one was Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson was a trainer at University of Houston, and he had a wooden leg. He had a wooden leg simply from the standpoint he used to play football in high school. Tore up his knee. At that time, you put a about a 60-pound cast on that leg from the crotch all the way down to the ankle made out of plaster. And at that time, you kept it as straight as you could. Well, it continued to swell, and he knew it. So anyway, to make a long story short, they had to end up amputating his leg about his knee joint because it cut off the circulation, and they had to eliminate that. Another problem that athletes had at that time is that you had it straight, and you had about 6-inch surgery on both sides, and then with that 45-pound cast of plaster, it would sweat and itch. Well, they'd want to scratch it. So what they'd end up doing, they'd take a coat hanger and bend the end of it a little bit, wrap some gauze in there, and put a little alcohol and rub it down, go down there. Oh, that felt so good, cooling it off and making it feel good. But then they would end up tearing some of the stitches inside there and not be aware of it and not know it. And then they, whenever they went in for the next, and it would itch and be uncomfortable, and then they'd go see the doctor, and then he'd end up cutting the cast off, and they'd have a big old wound about this big. So things have changed a lot, the way things used to be. Also, there was a guy named Ross Moore, trainer at Texas Western University, and now UTEP, and the gimme at Baylor was that Ross Moore always won a door prize, come hell or high water, and they gave him a lot of razz. Another one was Billy Pickard. Unfortunately, Texas A&M was very instrumental in what your game plan is now and what your job is now. Another two were brothers, Elmer and Delmer Brown. They were, one of them was a trainer at TCU and the other one was a trainer at East Texas State. And very instrumental. SMU, that was Cash Birdwell. And I think Cash is still around. There's some others. Spanky Stevens, even though he was a student trainer at Texas, was very with the head trainer that they had at Texas. Then there were some folks that sell you training supplies. One of them was Jim Cody. Jim Cody was with, had a several different businesses, protective pads, what have you, and was out working out of the Dallas area, and now he's passed on. Another one was Jack Kramer, your Kramer products. Jack and Frank Kramer. They'd always come to SWATA, they'd, and were very, very easygoing, visit with everybody, wanted to know everybody. And of course now, they have nothing to do with Kramer's, just the name. Another one is George Haney. George Haney was with Johnson & Johnson, and a good man. Then there was a Jim Fitzpatrick, and he was with Duke Labs, is who he was working with. And then there was another guy called Lim Cox. And I think Lim Cox with Alert Services, him and his dad, John T. Cox. John T. Cox would take a, and y'all probably never seen these, but a Medco Twin. The Medco Twin was an ultrasound machine and stimulator that was about this wide, stood up about this tall. There was two colors. There was a white one and a black one. And it probably weighed about 45, 50 pounds. John T. kept one in his vehicle. He probably sold that ultrasound more times. Say, well, you got to write me a PO and pay me now, but I can't leave that one with you. I got one being shipped to you. And then he'd make another round of that school and say, where's my sound? Where's my ultrasound? Where's my Medco Twin? Oh, it's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And Lim Cox has been great for SWATA. It's been great for the athletic trainers themselves. And of course, that's alert services. And I graduated in January of 65 at Cisco Junior College. And we had some good teams. And at that time, that December, coaches from Saul Ross came up and was interested in some of our players. And I told the AD, I said, well, I'll probably go join the Army. He said, well, let's see if they need a student trainer. And I said, well, where at? He said, Saul Ross. I said, where is that? He said, Alpine. I said, where is Alpine? He said, damn, Spoon, there's a map up here on the wall. I'll show you. So he showed me, and I said, well, up here is Quanah and Chillicothe, and way down here is Alpine. I said, I guess so, if that would work. And it did work, and I was very, very appreciative of that. And that's where I got in the, made my first association with Dr. Thurston Dean in Midland when I was at Saul Ross, because everybody, Dr. Dean was the guru of this whole area out here. And as far as going to taking at injured athletes, knees, shoulders, or whatever. And it's just, I'm sorry that you were not able to ever meet that young man, because he loved athletic trainers and took very good care of them. And you always had a little gift sent to you during Christmas. And he invited you to go in and watch his operations and what have you. And he was just as gentle as he could be. And it's a shame that you young people did not have that opportunity to meet that man. And he was a great loss as far as the athletic training facility aspect, but as far as the regular general aspect of the top-notch orthopedic in that, in this whole West Texas area. I graduated in 67 and went to Andrus High School in El Paso. Okay, some of y'all are still not hatched at that time, but at Andrus High School, we had more kids than Sol Ross and Cisco Junior College put together at that time. It was the top, it was a 5A school or top 4A school back at that time, and had about 1,800 kids in it. There, and you think y'all got a hard job, I taught four classes, and that was for $6,800 a year is what I was being paid back in 67, okay? Y'all make $6,800 in the first 6 months, so at least. In 69, I gave my first lecture at SWATA and at Baylor University at the Student Union Building. And what I gave was the, and Don and some of you might, and maybe Charlie and Melissa might get a kick out of this, but I was taught by Ross Moore how to make fiberglass pads, okay? If we couldn't find it, we didn't worry about looking at it or buying the catalog. We made our own pads with plaster, fiberglass, and it was custom made. And we took care of that. So that was what I gave my first lecture on. And the reason I was able to give my first lecture is because of the people that I have just mentioned that I had association with, visited with, set up a camaraderie with, talk to, and whatever. And as far as the respect of that. And in 1970 was when I first developed and gave my first athletic training clinic at Andrus, because we didn't have anything in El Paso. And I did that until I left. And in 1972, I was selected for an all-star football game at Fort Worth. And this is how this turned out to be. We were at a track meet up at Amarillo and running it. And the girls' mile relay was the last one that was of the event at that time. And this girl was on the back side of the track, and she was bleeding. And so I went over there to check with her and ask her where she was from. She was from some little town. They didn't have a trainer, and the coach or whatever wasn't there. And I said, well, I tell you what, won't you lay down here on this grass, and I'll clean that up and fix it up for you. And then I said, you got a pretty good cleat there, but you don't need any stitches. And but we'll put some stuff on there. And when you get back to your school, you tell your parents, they ought to probably go get a tetanus shot for you. So just take care of it. So I fixed that up. And I said, you okay? She said, yeah, thank you very much. So she went on her way. I went on my way. And about a week later, the school principal called me down. He said, you got a very important phone call down here. You need to, we'll get somebody to cover your class and come down here and take care of it. And I said, what the heck, you know? Well, I got to the phone, and this guy was on the phone. He said, you're the trainer at Andrus, right? I said, yes, sir. He said, you were up at Amarillo. I said, yes, sir. He said, you took care of a young girl. I said, oh, shit, now what? I said, Yes, I did. He said, that was my daughter. And I said, well, is she okay? He said, yes. He said, how would you like to be the trainer at the All-Star game at Fort Worth? I said, well, I guess I'd like to. So it kind of, that's kind of the way that happened, by an accident and maybe being at the right place at the right time at the right situation. That was when TCU had their new Elmer Brown training room, and Mike Sully was the trainer there. And he told me, he said, Spoon, if you get anything on this floor, I'll kill you. I said, well, you don't need to worry about that, because we will either mop it up before you get here, or we'll spill it before you get here and then get it cleaned up. But that was a very top-notch area, and what all. And then also 72 in November, I got a call from Logan Wood, who was at that time the head cheese with the licensing program. And he called me and he said, well, I don't think we're going to license you. And I said, okay, what for? He said, well, you didn't go to a college where there was an athletic trainer. I said, well, nothing I could do about that. And he said, well, I don't think you have the right training. And I said, well, what is it? Whatever it is, it's whatever it is. And so I figured, well, what the hell now? And but then in January of 73, I got another phone call from him, and he said, well, your name's been brought up several times. And he said, we decided that we're going to license you. And I said, well, I guess that's good. And he said, well, there's a lot of people come to bat for you. And you'll be grandfathered in on the program. I said, well, I'm very appreciative of that. And that's the way that happened. And in June of 73, we moved. Jerry Larned was the AD and the head football coach at Monahans. He called me in 72 and said, I need a trainer, and these guys that work for me want to have you here. I said, well, I can't come. I said, Joanne just finished college at UTEP, or Texas Western, and I said, she's got to teach 2 years before, because she didn't do her student teaching. She's got to teach 2 years at the same school before they'll give her certification. And he said, well, you little SOB. And I said, well, that's, sorry, Jerry. He said, well, I tell you what. He said, y'all come down here, take a look at the job, take a look at the school, we'll talk about it, and I'll keep this job open for a year if you'll come. So we drove down there, and he said, how much money are y'all making now? And I said, well, it's this. He said, well, each one of you will be making $10,000 more than what you're making right now. I said, okay, we'll be there. So we moved in 73 in June, where we were moving, packing, and loading up and going to Monahans. And it was good. It was a hard job. And in 74, well, then I started my second student athletic training session there at Monahans. I think we charged like 50 cents a person to come to it, and had doctors speak and what all. Also, Jim, I like this. Jerry Larned and Segris, the track coach, were real good, close friends. And Segris, I don't think Odessa College had a trainer there at that time, but Segris called Larned and he said, I need some attention to my track kids. And so Jerry said, well, what are you waiting on? He said, well, I need your, he said, you don't need my position. He said, you need to ask Spooner if he'll take care of him first. And so anyway, I was taking care of the Odessa College track kids at that time, part-time. I didn't see any nickels or dimes, but it was fun anyway. So, and in 1977, I gave my first lecture at Texas High School Coaches Association. And in 1979, I just reached a total burnout. And there's a couple of things I regret. But I had had all I could stand working that way, teaching four classes, and them not making any adjustments. And I just burned out. And I gave up the presidency of SWATA. I was second vice president. And the next year I was going to go in and be the president of SWATA. And it was just, to me at that time, it just wasn't worth it. So I went to work for Halliburton. And I worked for them for nearly a year as one of their safety advisors and working off a cement truck, which was, that was a different experience also. And then in 1980, or latter part of 1979, starting at 80, within Lim Cox and a couple other, B.J. Alfano, who was one of his salesmen, came out there, and Sam Aguilar, and they wanted me to go to work for them. And I went to work for them. Worked for them for about 14 years. And there was some good and some bad. I also spent about those 14 years working and helping Sol Ross State University in their football program at no charge. I'd get off the road whenever they'd go home, be playing at home, drive down, do their football game, spend the night in the training room, see their injuries on Sunday, head back home to Monahans, load up, be back on the road up to the Panhandle or whichever it was on Monday. But it was good. I was able to develop six or seven athletic training jobs for some schools and get some trainers some jobs. And that was very, very satisfying to be able to do that. And some of those guys are here right now in this room that are still there and have been there for 30 some odd years. I had the opportunity also, because of the association of working with Alert Services, to speak at Six-Man Clinic and Girls Coaching School and a lot of region area service centers that coaches lined up for their education because they were tired of listening to all the big psychologists and they wanted something dealing with sports medicine or athletic training and in the athletic field. In 85, moved to Fort Davis. And at that time, I got a phone call from Segris. And the trainer there said, do you want the job at OC? I said, I'd love the job at OC, but I can't. I just got through moving to Fort Davis, Texas. And I said, if you'd have called me a couple of three or four months ago, probably so. So they hired a little skinny butt guy called Jim Carlson from Texas is who ended up taking that job. And we've been good close friends ever since. But things happen for the right direction and the right things, I guess. In 86, as Don was saying, visited with the Prudes at Prude Ranch, and John Robert was tickled to death because Charlie Prude was also a trainer, and he was tickled to death to have the clinic. And we did it for a long time. And in that aspect of arranging for a clinic, I already knew a trainer, and he was the trainer at Big Springs High School, Everett Blackburn. And if you have never, if you did not have the opportunity to meet Everett Blackburn, I'm sorry also. He was good as gold and give you a shirt off your back and was a hell of a trainer. And that's the reason we have the social. He said, let's do it, but I'm going to do the social. I said, whatever you want to do, Everett, I'll do whatever you want to do. But that's the reason Everett died cancer on the way to the sports clinic. He had left early. Nobody knew what his problem was. Not even I. I didn't know. And I spent many nights on his couch with that dog named Dammit or something like that. And but he never did shit in his shoe like that, like Jim Carlson's dog did on at his house the other day. But Everett was a special person. And so he wanted to do the social, didn't want any help, and so that's one reason that we call the social the Everett Blackburn Social. But if you knew Everett, if you got to meet him, you would understand where I'm coming from and what I'm telling you. And got burned out at Alert. A lot of things happened. I guess I was probably fired and rehired more times by Lim Cox on a weekend, and then him calling me Monday morning and said, where in the hell are you? Well, I'm home. No, get your ass in the car and take off. I said, you just got through firing me. He said, I don't pay any attention to that. Get out there and make some money. So me and Kern Rohde were probably, if we'd had $1,000 for every time we were fired and rehired, we'd already be a millionaire. That's for sure. But Lim was a great guy, a great person, a great adversary of athletic trainers and also to the athletic training field. And he's another person that you just let some of it go in one ear and you let the other go out the other ear. Was something special. When I gave that up, I went back to El Paso again to Burgess High School. And I was there for 1 year. And they had coaching changes, administrative changes in Alpine. And the coach that got the job had been assistant coach at Kermit. And he called Joanne, wanted to know where I was at. The superintendent happened to be from Quanah, Texas. And my dad and his dad knew each other real well. So there was kind of a coordination there. But in the years that I was at Alpine, I was there, I hoped and figured it would be my last job. I was there 9 years. We went through 5 superintendents and school went broke. So you know whose job went first. They wanted me to do 75% of what I was doing for $25,000 less money. So that didn't work. In 1995, fortunately, I was the first trainer recognized by the Texas High School Coaches Association. And that was a great honor for those people to do that. In 2001, I was on the committee that started the Texas State Athletic Trainers Association with Spanky and a bunch of the other guys, and I think we were down at San Marcos at a meeting when we did all that. And in 2003, that's when my job at Alpine petered out. So then I went to back to El Paso again, to Montwood High School. And I was there until 2005, and then I went to Fort Stockton. And then I thought maybe Fort Stockton might be my last job. Well, that was my last training job. I could have the coach that they had. You couldn't order a roll of toilet paper unless it crossed his desk. And I lasted about a year and a half, and I told them they could take that job and shove it. To give you an idea, he wasn't even around the last day of January when I retired, and I took duct tape and taped my keys and taped my cell phone on his door and said, adios. And I hadn't been back since. So I was fortunate to get associated with a guy in El Paso that second time around called Jim Murphy. He used to be the head trainer and worked with Justin down at McNeese State in Louisiana. And he called me to ask me if I would help him with the El Paso Rodeo, and I said, yes, I would. And so that's where I first got associated with Justin. And the director at that time was kind of a horse's butt. And the only one he would let me work would be Pecos and not go anywhere else. But I did Pecos Rodeo for about 18 years, did about 6 or 7 or 8 years without any kind of Justin Heeler or whatever there. And then that kind of went down the drain with another member of the Justin program. And I waited till about May of 2007, and we had had Tandy Freeman out to speak at the clinic numerous times, and I called Tandy and told him that I'd like to start a program, and he said, only if you can get sponsorship to pay your way, because you cannot do it out of your pocket. So I called some aces in, and the aces came through, and we're still doing it. So we've been doing it I've been doing it. Now Charlie retired, and he's my right-hand man. And so we've been doing it since 2007. We do 44 events a year between the PRCA, the WRC, which is a Working Ranch Rodeo Association out of Amarillo. And now we are doing Tough Edelman's Bull Rides. It was CBR, but the CBR folded, going with PBR. And unfortunately, the PBR and CBR used the clout that Tough had to put them where they are right now. And this all happened back in January, and we're waiting to see what takes place. And then in 2012, I called Jim Carlson and said, hey, I think we need to have a FITEC down here at Alpine. The only thing they got is a hospital, and people don't want to go. And so they studied it, him and the other couple investors. And in November, we started putting that package together, and we opened up in 2013 in January, and we're still off and running. And it's been good. And it seems like it's getting better every day. And with some of this, I have been able to have a lot of honors that I have been appreciative of. The Greenbelt Bowl back in 1992 inducted me into their Hall of Honor. And I didn't get to go because we were having a sports medicine clinic here at Prude Ranch. And didn't make that. But another one, I was recognized by the Sun City Athletic Trainers Association in El Paso, which I am very appreciative of. And then in 1997, I went into the SWATA Hall of Honor, which was a great honor to do, with the respects of all the people that I had dealt with, worked with, and got that honor. And then in 2017, I was also honored at Sol Ross with their Athletic Hall of Honor also. And then I've got one more coming up that I found out a couple of months ago that I'm going to be honored at SWATA with the Texas State Athletic Trainers Association in their first Hall of Honor. And athletic training has really been great to me. Athletic trainers have been great to me. And that's one reason that for the sports clinic that we have a lot of new faces here this year. And that's fantastic. And very appreciative about what y'all have either heard, read, seen on your little iPod thing, okay, that Don puts on there. And just as well, you can, Charlie and Melissa, there's a Davis Mountain Sports Medicine Clinic you can find. Charlie's got Teaspoons Rodeo Sports Medicine that you can find some things that we do on that aspect and where we go. But let me say this. It hasn't always been fun and games. And this is what's coming up next. And it's called the Athletic Trainers Unknown. I need you to pass these out. You can put one on each table or something. There's not that many to go around to everybody. I got a little handout I just want you to take a look at and just hold on to. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. I'll give you a minute to look at it. Basically speaking, this book, Athletic Training and Sports Medicine by the American Academy of Orthopedic Sciences, is considered the Bible of athletic training. This is an old copy, 1987, 86. I think there's a newer version now. It's probably 1.5 times this size. My unknown to you that I think is important, number one is, you probably didn't learn it in your training sessions in school, possibly not from your head trainer that you had, not reading it in any books that you've had. We used to get what was called the Kramer newsletter, came out every month. And the Kramer newsletter had lots of good information as well as Kramer products about how to treat this, how to treat that, what you do, what kind of pads, things of information. It's about 4 or 5 pages, but it was called the Kramer newsletter. Very informative and had a lot of information to it. That was my guideline back in the 60s. I look forward to it. I learned a lot. I didn't have a teacher. My teacher was the Kramer newsletter. And also running into other trainers and going to SWATA and talking to other trainers. And that, and buying books that I could get on sports medicine, anatomy, whatever. In fact, I don't think this subject that I'm going to mention has ever been discussed at SWATA. And It could happen. It might happen. It has happened, and it will happen. I know all of you in here have got your CPR card, okay? You got to have that to keep your license. In an honest aspect, how many of you have ever performed CPR on an athlete? Everybody's got one, but we've got about 12 people that have done that, right? But it's still mandatory. You've been used to working on a dummy. That's where your experience is. Unless you run into a situation to where you had to, and you had, hopefully you had the help of the EMTs there, maybe, in some cases. My first death in athletics came in 1970. Now, you're talking about a guy that graduated in 67 that never had any basic higher administrative type knowledge, learning, discussion, talked. You never talked about it in first aid and safety. You never talked about it in anatomy and physiology or what all. But we were having the state wrestling tournament at Andrus High School. And we had four mats going on. Had a guy by the name of Manny Pacias in El Paso. Heck of a guy. And he was there helping me. And we had a couple others from some of the other schools. Some of the schools that came from the areas like Amarillo or whatever, they didn't send trainers. You know, they only had one or whatever. You know, not blessed with three or four schools like you have right now. So this young athlete, it was right there at the mat where I was standing, and this young athlete from Burgess won his match, made him state champion. His dad was about five rows up in the bleachers. And all of a sudden, boom, 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 down he came. He was military, and he had had a heart attack. He had already had some heart problems, but because of him jumping up and with the excitement of his boy, he had an initial, and he fell right down there in front of us. And so Manny ran over, and we started external heart massage, and the EMTs, they called the EMTs, they came out, and in most cases you got two people in the ambulance. That's it. Now, you don't have all this defibrillator junk and all this other high-pressure stuff that's in the ambulances there. You had an oxygen tank, you had a stretcher, and you had an AMBU bag, and you had the oral insertions. That was about it. So we were given external heart massage, trying to get that guy going, and the EMTs came, and he said, well, there's only two of us. I said, Manny, will you stay here, and I'll go with them? He said, yes. And at that time, it took about 35 minutes to drive from Andrus to William Beaumont General Hospital, okay? And that's not counting all the traffic situations. So he worked on the AMBU bag and the oxygen, and I was giving him external heart massage that 35 minutes all the way to the hospital. But he ended up going ahead and dying. Now, you're talking about a kid from had never seen death in Chillicothe High School, just watching him shoot him up on the TV or whatever, but that was in real, actual instant aspect that had to be done. Second death, 1972, at Andrus High School, JV football game. We were playing at Austin High School. And they had a trainer, and I was there. I just happened to go up and watch the ball game. And had a clean play coming over to the right side, and whatever, it happened so fast that I went down and it was my athlete, and he said, "Doc, my head's killing me." And I said, "Okay." And then he just kind of went out of it. And the other trainer came over. We had to go down the stairs to get to the training room, and they helped us get him down there. We did CPR and what I would call the ambulance, and they took him to the hospital. The surgeon there was neurosurgeon was Dr. Zoffagary. This happened about 10:30 at night, and his parents were there, and I was there, and somewhere around maybe 1:30 in the morning, Dr. Zoffagary came down, and he said, "Unfortunately, your boy has a subdural hematoma. If he lasts till in the morning, he'll be lucky." And he was in excellent physical shape. They took him off the ventilator after the first day. He lasted 3 days, and then he passed on. That was the second time. The third time, 1973, my first year in Monahans. Third death came after a year. If you look at this article that you got on your table, Mr. Grant was on the freshman. He weighed about 200 pounds, and they were doing stand-up tackle drill. Okay, well, they stood here, and the other athlete went up to grab him like this. Their feet got tangled up, fell down on the ground. He immediately was not able to breathe. And he had spinal damage to the third and fourth cervical vertebrae. We had to do external heart massage and mouth-to-mouth resuscitation for him to get there until we could get the ambulance there. And then they had to do CPR on him all the way to Odessa. Like I said, he weighed probably about 190 pounds. That was August. And if you look on the end of that paper, he passed away in May of the next year and weighed about 100 pounds. Okay? At that time, I was working on my thesis at Sol Ross, and I did a thesis on concussions and head injuries. And the AD, or the UIL director at that time, was Bailey Marshall. And Bailey Marshall and I were real good, close friends. And he and I had several talks. And we went to bat in trying to formulate a deal for helmets to be used during 2-a-days, because they wasn't at that time. You put them on first day, head knocker, you know, bull in the ring, if I remember that right. That was who's got the balls to stand in there and do it. And you know, so I wrote articles to all the professional doctors back east and whatever. And they said, "Well, you can't condition the brain." Well, it's there, okay? So anyway, I developed an exercise to acclimate the brain and acclimate the individual prior to. And we broke the rules. And I told Jerry, I said, "We got to do this." And I said, "Y'all go to the donut shop, coffee shop. I need 30 minutes. And what we would do in the spring, we didn't have spring training, but in the spring, first 15 minutes of the practice, Everybody, the helmets were lined up like Athletic Supply or somebody was going to come pick them up. They were all lined up in our enclosed workout area. But each player knew where his helmet was. And what we ended up doing, we'd go in there and we'd do an exercise. They'd put their mouthpiece in, snap on their helmet, and then we'd do what I call slap happy. They'd sit there in a position and work on isometric isotonic, and then we'd come back and we'd do this like this. And then we did some other exercises. And then I would take and record, were you dizzy? Did you have a headache? Did you have a headache before? Did you see stars? Or did it bother you at all? And whatever. And that we did that in the spring. And then we did it when we came back in the fall, we did the same thing. But it took, and I did this thesis, and what have you. And it's kind of strange. I met with the AMA, and also Bailey Marshall did with the meeting. And that guy that just retired from Killeen, he called me up, and he was going to kick me out of SWATA because he said, you're misrepresenting SWATA with all these meetings. I said, doesn't have a damn thing to do with SWATA. I'm doing this on my own. I said, Bailey Marshall and I. Well, I don't think so. I said, well, whatever. So, but it took the UIL, even with the help of Bailey Marshall, 10 years before they finally passed that law or rule, or put a rule in that they could issue helmets during two-a-days. And whether it's helped or not, I think it's helped as far as acclimation, custom. I mean, it's just like, to me, if we put the helmet on you right now and did some of the exercises, you'd probably end up getting dizzy. So as a comparison, it's just like taking ball tires, putting new tires on, your vehicle's going to drive totally, totally different. And fortunately, the coaches that I worked with, we did these exercises prior to the game, out on the field, and we did them prior to the practice before we ever got started. And it paid off. In 2015, had my fourth death to a certain extent. And Travis Chipman was there with me. We were doing the rodeo at Helotes, just about getting started. And all of a sudden, guy came around, one of the pickup men, came around and boom, hit the ground right there in front of the chutes. We went out there, did the CPR, did all that. Ambulance came out there. He was the doctors and the ERs. He had already had a history of a heart attack, and they said he was probably, the way he fell and the thud that he hit the ground, he was probably already dead when he hit the ground. But they did all kinds of, we did the stimulation, we did the shock. They shot him up with four or five different kinds of vein medicine and whatever, and called the trauma care unit came out, and they did their thing, but they just never could get him back. And I guess the fifth death was Joanne there at the house. Had had a couple of accidents. She died of a broken heart, but she was gone in about 15 minutes. And I did external heart massage on here for about 10 or 12, 15 minutes, it seemed like, but it didn't do any good. And, you know, back in those days, now we have all those shootings and all this takes place. And if you do this, it happens at a school now, you got all kinds of psychologists and people coming in to help you feel better, do better. That wasn't even part of the picture. You just went out to practice the next day and like nothing happened. I mean, they were going to work out. They were going to play. And that's what we did. And so there's some things you never forget. Some things you can't forget. And, you know, there wasn't any kind of help response teams like they do now. And there's, this Bible is a great book. The other edition is a great book. Reading what you can on athletic training is great. Death is listed in here one time. And it has to do with the section that talks about an athlete having a heart attack. That's it. Not any athletic injury, but athlete having a heart attack. So, you know, I talked to some people that came out of the graduate programs and asked them, I said, did y'all discuss death? No. All we had to do is learn that damn anatomy. That was it. You know, we had to know it backwards and forwards. You know, I guarantee you one thing, if you went into Dr. Dean's office and told him, said he's got an ACL, PCL, and probably a meniscus, he'd say, get your ass out of here, buddy. You don't know. Because I hadn't even looked at him yet. So how do you know that? We hadn't even done an x-ray. As far as closing out this a quote, always do more than is required of you. And that's the end of the quote. Okay? But you know who that came from? General George S. Patton. Now, if you know anything about history, you know. And that's where it comes from. All of you people have made my life great. The trainers of the past, and each one of you here today. And I wish you all well and blessed and happy trails down the road. Thank you very much.